I think one of my favorite things is when one of the really little ones is trying to keep up with the bigger ones. You know, the big ones will leap off the stage like 6 feet. I almost hurt watching it. And then the little one will get down and scoot off the steps and then run to try to catch up. That's Ron. Yeah. Amen. Well, today, you can see that message, the title for today. This is Sanctity of Life Sunday. And we're going to celebrate that as a church. We celebrate that every January. And that's not just like something we do because, hey, let's be good Christians and talk about it, but something that we actually value here. And we're going to spend today talking about what that is and why that is. When we look at that term, Sanctity of Life Sunday, you might know what it is. Some of you may go, I've never really even really heard that before. But when we look at what sanctity means, it helps give us an idea of what we're celebrating. A simple way to describe sanctity is something that is sacred. And so when you talk about sanctity of life, it's saying that life is sacred. And that's what we're celebrating. And what you'll see on there is it's called All of Life. So today, it's not just that we're going to talk about abortion and that sort of thing. We're going to talk about all of life. So it's going to be a little bit different kind of message. I'm praying that this is the Lord's time. We honor Him with it. While we're talking about this, I want us to ask the question, what would it look like for the Tenasket Free Methodist Church to be a community of life, a community, a body of believers that really celebrates this, really celebrates this? This is not an opportunity to talk about politics or to champion some political agenda, because the conversation around this isn't political. There's a lot of people that will say it is, but when the Lord champions something and He holds it as valuable, it's not political. It's theological. So that's why we're going to talk about it, because this is not a political thing as much as people will try to make it sound like one. We serve a God, the God of life, and He calls all life valuable. So a community of life is one who values just that, all of life. you guys like me in your house, you have way too many mugs. You're laughing because you've got that cupboard that has like just mugs that you've collected over the last 15 years. You shove it in there. Most of the time there's like two or three in the front that you use. There's like 12 in the back that you forgot you even owned. But there's that cupboard of it. I have one. Someone gave this to me a while ago. This is the one I use at church when I drink my Irish breakfast tea. It's the best one, by the way. Okay, so this is the one I use at church. Steph knows it well because I'll put my Irish tea in it. A couple of packets of, I like it a little sweeter. A couple of packets of raw sugar. Maybe I feel healthy putting that in there. But I'll drink from this. It's my favorite mug. It's not really valuable. It really isn't. I think it was given to me. I'm not trying to out a person in their generosity, but they gave it to me as a gift one day just to say thank you for serving as pastor. And you could get it on, what's that site? Christian Books. It used to be CBD.com, but they changed that for obvious reasons. Christian Book Distributors. It was probably $5. Okay? Probably $5. There's really nothing unique about this, special to me, but there's nothing unique about it. Now, you can get a mug like this. This is my favorite one at home. You can get a one like this. A friend gave me this. Michael Collado over in the Philippines gave me this as a gift when I was over visiting, when our family went to Thailand. It's got Bagyao on it from the Philippines. It's where he's from. Starbucks comes out with these. And it's like you can travel and get these special mugs for the locations. This mug is like $5. You put Starbucks on this mug and it's worth like $30. Okay? There's nothing, it's still from this probably the same lump of clay, but because this is stamped with something, it makes it more valuable, right? Some of you already see where I'm going with this. We're going to talk about what it means to be made in the image of God, that you were stamped with His image on you, every human being was, and that gives you value. Not just a $30 mug, but you were stamped with the image of God, the one who created everything. All of human life has been stamped with that same image and worthy of indescribable value. Why are we talking about this? Why is it something that we need to spend a Sunday on? The Pope, a little while ago, the Pope wrote this article, and in it, he coined this term, a community of death. Not a community of death, a culture of death. He coined this term, a culture of death. I don't want to go a bunch of detail on what he wrote about, but essentially what his article was on is that at one point in time, we as a society grew so enlightened that we could look back at events in the past and see how it's intrinsically wrong. We could see how, like biblically speaking, the Assyrians or the Ammonites, that human sacrifice and things like that, that's wrong across the board. If you're a historian or history buff or you've seen the famous movie, The Spartans, when there's a defect, we could see how it's wrong to look at a child, see that there's a defect, and toss them off a cliff because they don't offer value to our society, right? We can look at that and see that's wrong. But what the Pope was talking about is that through over time, we left this place where we saw there was something wrong with this decision and started to circle back around to, well, there may be a time and place where this is okay. In it, he talked about up to that point, the introduction of Roe versus Wade, there had been more deaths from abortion than from the casualties of war for the previous 100 years. Did you hear that right? That article was written in 1995. That was 30 years ago. Just take a guess. I could tell you numbers. We don't need to spend our time on that. Just take a guess at how much farther we've gone down that road. To this day, the best guess is there's been 65 million abortions from 1973, the introduction of Roe versus Wade. You're going to talk about something that just, it's a poster for we don't care about anything that doesn't bring me value? That's one right there. And that's the country we live in. Now, you've been a part of, I'm sure you've been a part of it. You've seen the people out there. There are people that are trying to champion that there's value for a baby in the womb. And I want to talk about that a little bit today, but we're going to talk about from the womb to the tomb, there's value in all human life. Here's the reality. You see human life undervalued when society says it doesn't offer me, it doesn't help us at all. That's true for the baby in the womb. That's true for as a person gets older, they start to get dementia. They don't offer much. They get shoved off and cast off because all they do is get in the way. So why talk about this? Because it's something that you and I face and will continue to face. It's something that God says is worthy of talking about. He places a value on it, so we will as well. So what does it look like to be a community of life? Don't just take my word for it that this is something God values. Let's look at his word. In the very beginning, in Genesis 1, which, by the way, I can't make that any easier. It's the first chapter. All the way to the left side of your book. God at this time had started creating everything. If you know your Bible well, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, and it says that he created that he created the skies and it was good. He created light and it was good. He created the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and it was good. It was good. It was good. It was good. And when God says it's good, it doesn't mean like, yeah, that's pretty good. Like if I try to create something, I'm not very artistic and it's kind of good. When he says it's good, like this is perfect. This is created exactly how I designed it to be. But then we get to the creation of man, and you'll read this in Genesis 1, 26. We're going to just go through 28. It says, then God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female. He created them. And God blessed them. And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth. God, in the beginning, creates man in a way that's different than everything else. He created birds and he said it was good. He created fish and he said it was good. He created all the livestock on the earth and he said it was good. But he created man and he said this is going to be different because he made in our image. After our likeness. That means a lot of different things. But one of them is nothing else has a soul and a spirit like we do. Right? We're created in God's image. You have a soul. We're created like him in his likeness. You have value apart and above the rest of creation. But it doesn't just stop there. There's this term that you see a couple of times in there that we create man in our image. They're going to have dominion over creation. It says it in verse 26 and 28. He repeats himself. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock. And then again later, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish. That you and I are created in this way that we're supposed to serve over God's creation, steward it well, have dominion over it. That we are different than the rest of creation. Not because you and I have risen to the top of the apex predator food chain, like some people will say, but because you and I were created that way. When you look at human life, there's three ways to look at it. I'm not going to dig in real deep. There's the philosophical view, the biological view, and the theological view. Okay? This is a basic argument around these things. Philosophical view. I learned this in college in philosophy where my head hurt listening to it. Like Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. That your existence is unique and different and that you are above everything else because you think that you are. That you can prove nothing else has consciousness. Like, why are we listening to a guy that thought the whole universe was running essentially on a supercomputer? Why are we spending our time on this? But that's one of the views of the value of life, that there's this philosophical view behind it. There's the biological view. Probably the most common for someone who has an atheist, that you and I are just a giant bag of flesh and bones. We're a beast just like everything else. We're just a little bit better at it. That you have the same value as a gorilla down the road. There's no gorillas down the road. Let's be really honest, and I'm just going to be bold. We see this happen and become a part of politics all the time. That's why when you go to Oregon, animals almost have as much rights as you and I do. Because it's just a part we're just biology. We're just flesh and bones like the animals are. So let's make sure that they have the same rights. Fish have feelings. That's the second view. The theological view is that man was created uniquely in God's image and is worthy of value above everything else. Those are the three basic views of what this humanity that God gives us, that we stand on the theological view that God created man in his image and worthy of value. I should stick to my notes. What the term you'll hear around this is the Imago Dei. It's this Latin term that God has made, and Imago Dei means the image of God. That man was made in the image of God and is worthy of value. And he gave us the earth to subdue it, and we were created differently and uniquely than the rest of mankind. Let me give you another example. I'm an animal guy. I do. I like animals. We don't really have pets. Crystal's allergic to everything that it meows or barks. At one point, we had a dog that she was not real happy about. But I know some people that care for their dogs like a child. They'll call them what do they call them? What is it? Well, that means something different today. Fur babies. But they care for their animals like I would a child. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with caring for an animal that you have and treating it well. But no matter how much you love Bootsy, I looked up, by the way, I was just curious, the most common name for a dog in 2025 is Luna. I have a chicken named Luna. No matter how much you like Bootsy and value how Bootsy has learned to do certain tricks and things like that, it does not have a your dog does not have a consciousness. Let me explain that. How many of you driving down the road when that guy rides your tail, you're like, I'm going to slam on the brakes. I'm going to ram him. You've had a thought like that. Don't lie. Okay. We've had those thoughts, but guess what? You don't run on instincts. You can logically go, okay, that's probably not the right decision. I should handle this another way. You know who does not think that way? Bootsy runs on instinct. If Bootsy could drive a car and is being, they're driving too close, Bootsy's going to slam on the brakes. But you and I were created differently than the rest of God's creation. We were given a soul. We were made in His likeness, that we have a conscience. Man is created differently. And I want to talk about it in an even more personal way. If you flip to the next chapter in Genesis 2, looking at verse 7, when God creates Adam, He does it in a unique way. Chapter 1, He will talk about the whole of creation. In chapter 2, He goes into more detail on it. It's not that He's creating again. And so He goes into more detail on the creation of the first man. It says in verse 7, "Then the Lord God formed the man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. The man became a living creature." There's this intimate language that He uses, that the rest of creation, He said, "Let there be light," spoke it into existence. There was light. He spoke and birds existed. He spoke and the fish came. He spoke and all the land gathered together. But when it was man, when it was Adam, He formed man out of dust, and then He breathed life into his nostrils. There's this intimacy that God has with you and I, those He created in love, that He creates you in a unique way that's set apart from the rest of creation. He breathed life into Adam. I love when Francis Chan talks about this. He'll be very passionate about it. He said, "Hey, you don't have to do this. Close your eyes for a second. Take in a deep breath. You feel the breath in your lungs? You know, God is still breathing life in you the same way He did Adam. He cherishes you, values you just as much as He did Adam. This is still happening today." I think whenever we're in relationship with Jesus, we'll forget about all the blessings and mercy that come with being in relationship with Him. Just the sheer magnitude of mercy and grace that come with Jesus. And one of those is how much mercy He has for us. And the reason I'm saying that, we see this picture. Whenever we have this conversation, I recognize that there's people that, as we talk about abortion being wrong, as we talk about dehumanizing people and how wrong that is and valuing human life, I recognize that there's people that may be listening that have partaken in this, that may have had an abortion, that may have given the advice that, yeah, abortion's okay, that may have given the advice to dehumanize someone in any form or fashion. And I want to make sure to have compassion with that, because Jesus had compassion with it. And the story that comes to mind is Jesus is in the temple and He's teaching, and all the people go and grab, the men go and grab this woman who's caught in adultery, and they drag her in among them, which she's probably not wearing any clothes, but drags him in and says, "Hey, Jesus, what are we," this is the Mac paraphrase, "what are we supposed to do with her?" Trying to catch him in something. And He says nothing, but bends down and draws in the sand, which you guys know what He drew? He drew in the sand and said, "We'll find out in heaven," because we don't know what He wrote. But He stands up and says, "Which one of you, without sin, you can cast the first stone?" He goes back down to drawing in the sand. And I love the detail in John when it writes this. And it says that, I believe it's John chapter 8. Should have wrote this down. But I'm getting a nod. It's John chapter 8. In there it says that the oldest to the youngest, they dropped their stones and walked out. you and I both know, as you get older, you go, okay, I'm not as perfect as I thought I was. I've got my mistakes and I've got my ways. I'm growing. You remember when you were like 21, and you were God's gift to the world? No wrong. Everyone else is dumb. They've got to just figure it out like you have. There's a book I have in my office called Captain Macklin. It's a fictional book about Civil War era. And there's a phrase in there I've used often. You'll never know as much as you know is when you're 8 and when you're 80. Sorry, when you're 18 and when you're 80. Because when you're 18, you think you know everything. When you're 80, you probably do. Here's what I'm saying. These men are standing there recognizing how they've fallen short. When Jesus says, those of you without sin, cast the first stone, they recognize and they leave. What does Jesus do right after that? He goes to this woman who's caught in adultery, who's clearly not treated very well in society, and says, who's here to condemn you? Then neither do I. Go and sin no more. The compassion that Jesus has on her in that moment, I think is, I don't know if there's a way for me to describe it in the full magnitude. Jesus has compassion on every way that you and I have fallen short. That includes when we're talking about the sanctity of life. That includes the ways that we may have dehumanized people that God says is his masterpiece. So while we're talking about this, I recognize you may have partaken, given advice, helped those who have been a part of abortion or in some other form. But God has compassion on you. I'd just like to say the same thing. Who is here to condemn you? Then neither do I. I want to reflect on this just a little bit more before we go in, because I want to make today a little practical. We're going to talk about ways that to be a community of life. It's not something we just talk about, but something that we partake in. There's this verse in, there's a chapter in Psalm 139 that you've probably heard quoted many times. But what I'd like to do is talk about how David's writing, and he's talking about this unique relationship between him and God. But it's more than that. It's God and all of mankind. And so I'm going to read through it and talk about a couple of things. But what I'd like to do is invite you, as I read through it, you can follow along. I'm going to invite you to hear this as the Lord is speaking it over you, that this is between you and the Lord. Starting in verse 1. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up, you discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You hem me in behind and before and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. Where shall I go from your spirit, or where else shall I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me and the light about me be night. Even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is bright as the day, for darkness is as light with you. For you formed me, you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows them very well. My frame was not hidden from you. When I was being kept in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. Can you hear the personal touch that God has on each individual life? There's those phrases that he uses several times. He says that you knit me. You knit me together in my mother's womb. You formed my inward parts. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. There's these statements that well before, like, wait, we know how biology works. If we look at an ultrasound and we look inside the belly of a mama, we're not going to see two hands in there knitting. Recognize that. But these are personal statements that God creates you uniquely and personally, that He designed you in a unique way. Not just your human body, but your personality, the ways you're gifted, the ways He's uniquely created you. God does that with each human being. There's a lot of people that make the argument, well, you know, it's the mom's body. Okay, I won't disagree. That's the mom's body, but the baby is not a part of her. We can go to science and say, it's scientifically proven. The moment of conception, that baby has a unique DNA in and of itself. Exists inside the human body. Like, the woman is this beautiful apartment for it to grow in until it can survive on its own. But it is still created. It's its own creation. God does that personally. God does that uniquely with each baby, with each human being. So what does it look like then for us to champion this? It's recognizing that like that verse I love in Ephesians 2:10, that each person was made on purpose with a purpose. We are His workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. Recognizing that God didn't just make you and step back. He turned on this machine. Humanity started going and it's continued to go. But that He is a personal God who doesn't just form you with His hands in your mother's womb, but that He has a plan for you, for me, a way to serve Him. Do you also recognize that? As a worship team, we were talking this morning and we were praying. God spoke and created everything. Does He need your help? Pretty sure He can accomplish things without my assistance, but He chooses to call you into relationship with Him and to work alongside Him. The Creator of the universe, who hung the stars and by His great power they remain in place, chooses to use you to accomplish things for His kingdom. That you weren't just fearfully and wonderfully made, He also gave you unique work to do. He created you on purpose with a purpose. That means the ones that is all mankind, not just the ones we like. Not just the ones who are like-minded with us, that agree with our view of common sense, that have the same beliefs, that have their lives together and are contributing members of society, but also those, this includes also those that don't have their lives together. The drug addict who's strung out and living in the gutter. The guy who's been addicted to alcohol and his life is in the gutter. The one who is out marching and championing something that you and I say, they don't even belong in our country because of this. There's a whole list of things that falls under. All of human life is stamped with the image of God and worthy because they were all fearfully and wonderfully made. This also includes those who are disabled. So you go, well, what are they going to do for society? I don't know, but God does. And if there's one thing I've learned about our God, He doesn't make mistakes. Jesus is the one who said, you want to know how serious we're supposed to take His love? That we love our enemies and pray for those who persecute us. So if we're going to be a community of life, a community that lives this out each day, how do we do that? There are a bunch of ways for us to do that. The verse I like to go to is Jeremiah 29:7. While in exile, while God's people are not in Jerusalem, they're in exile, it says, but seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare you will find your welfare. So there are ways that you do this, that you live this out practically in your environment? What would it look like if you went to your neighbor who you don't know, that one that kind of gets, you know, they rub you the wrong way? I've got one. You got one. I know it. But what if you went to them and actually loved them like Christ tells you to? What if you invited them over for dinner and got to know them in a way that actually values them as fearfully and wonderfully made? What if when you're going down the road and you see the guy holding the sign that's been there for like 2 years, you actually stop and tell him how much God loves him and that he was created on a purpose with a purpose? There are ways that you and I can live this out each day practically in our own lives. I want to point out just a special recognition of two ways that are a little more unique. One of them is adoption. There are an awful lot of kids that do not have parents to call their own, that for a variety of reasons have been treated as one who has no value and has been cast off. Whether that is a tragic accident or for whatever reason, parents have left this child to a governing body to care for. Adoption is taking this child and caring for them, demonstrating to them that they are cared for and loved when they have probably experienced what they've experienced so far is that they're a nuisance or a mistake. Another way that you can live this out is by being a part of your local government. And I said this isn't a political thing, but that doesn't mean we don't better the area and the country in which we live by championing what God champions in a governing body. Let's be realistic. You and I aren't going to make much of a difference on the national level, but you can hear. And I know that this is a unique call for some people, and it should be. But you can take this same like-mindedness, this same community of life to the local government and serve and be a part of it. Those are some ways that you can live out this idea of being a person who champions what God champions, about being a community of life. But there are a couple of things that you'll hear about from time to time, and I just want to point out other ways that you can be a part of. There's four ministries that we support and are a part of. Our local one is CareNet. If you don't know it, this is a pro-life facility down. They have a couple of locations. The closest one is down in Omak. They're ones that they're trying to help the unborn. They're trying to help the unborn because most of the time, a person that wants to go for an abortion thinks there's no other option. And so their goal is to teach and train and bring some insight that there are options. There's ways to find help that this is a baby worth keeping. And then what they do is one of the main ways they do that. If you've not heard about this, let me tell you. They raised a whole bunch of money to get this bus, this ultrasound machine that travels around. You've probably seen it parked in the Lutheran church parking lot. It's free to go get an ultrasound. I think there's a 75% more chance that the baby is kept if the mom sees an ultrasound. So it's a big deal that happens. And CareNet is one that we support from Mother's Day to Father's Day. We always do a fundraiser. The church supports it. And I know several people in our church serve at it. There are some ways, if you're curious and want to be more involved, there are serving opportunities with CareNet. There's a whole list of them. I asked Shauna, she's the one that runs it, what are ways that we can get involved? And she sent me a massive list, and I'm going to share them with you. Mobile maintenance, a janitor that cleans up at their center, a client advocate or someone that does coaching, a community coach for the nurse mobile days. You meet with the nurse and at the site and you stay with her in case someone comes and there's an opportunity. A class facilitator, meaning birthing classes, father's class. There's a boutique or stocking organizing, marketing, event coordinating, church community presentations, a parade driver. There's probably more than that, but that's what she sent me. There's many ways that you can be someone who lives this out and is a part of this ministry. We want to pray for them. We give to them. They need resources. It costs money to run a mobile machine and have a nurse and those sort of people. But there's other ways that with your time and talents, you can contribute to that. That's our local one. There's another one that's kind of both. There's a ministry we call Set Free Movement that we support. If you've been here when he was here, you heard Kevin Austin, who is the director of Set Free. He started it and has been championing this. This is something that is a ministry that's in the U.S. but also across the world. I messaged him and said, "Hey, Kevin, what are some stories of success that I can share with the church? We're going to talk about it this Sunday." And he said, "You want stories? How about this? In India, since the start of Set Free in India, they've rescued 855 kids who have been stolen and trafficked." Well, there's 855 stories to celebrate there. Their primary goal is to educate and teach, because the more people know in these countries where they're a little more, the word's evading me, but where they're a little more at risk, is knowledge, it's knowing. And so their goal is to get ahead of the curve and teach young boys and girls what this looks like and give them some information. There are two other ways. One that my family partakes in, it's called ICCM. It's International Child Care Ministries. These are kids that are growing up in an impoverished country that you as a family, as a person, can sponsor and say we want to give them the basic necessities of life. This is food and water and clothing and helps with their education. We sponsor one in a creative access country that I've had the pleasure of visiting. And a little five-year-old boy, I think he's five now, five-year-old boy that we're able to pray for, we're able to write letters to and help them grow and see that they're ones of value and worth in God's image. Can I tell you, I know a personal story behind this. How it looks like. Not every kid is going to look like this, but in a creative access country that I can't name because we're online, there's a boy that was sponsored by ICCM, was sponsored for a little under a decade, and today is a pastor in this country. I don't know if every kid's going to look like that, but God created them on a purpose with a purpose as well. And they're in a country where the basic necessities of life are difficult. So you can join in on that. Again, that's ICCM has over 60 years of history, has helped over 50,000 kids in 40 different countries, and there's still plenty on the list that need help. That's one way you can help, and it's $35 a month. If you're curious about that, let me know. There's one other ministry that is very similar. I shared about this a couple months ago. It's a ministry called In Better Hands. This is a ministry that's very similar to ICCM. It's a sponsorship ministry where you can sponsor a kid. They also are building facilities where kids are protected. I shared about this a while ago. There's this ministry in Chiang Mai, Thailand. It's called the Home of Hope. And that's one example of what it looks like. There are 36 homes in six different countries that the facilities are for helping those who are most at risk. Street children primarily, but they have opportunity to rescue and protect babies, whole families, villages. This is one of the most, if you heard me before, this is one of the most holistic ministries I've ever seen. This, again, is one of those opportunities where you go to their website, you can find a child to sponsor, and it's the same thing as ICCM. The reason I bring this one up is our family got to go spend time with them in a unique way, and if the Lord provides a team to go to Thailand this next fall, we will be going to their facility and doing something like a VBS for them. So for the same thing, it's a $35 a month. You can sponsor a child and provide ways for them that their basic necessities. I said I wanted to talk about practical ways to live that out. Those are some of the ways. And here's what I want to challenge you with. How is God calling you to partake in this personally? I'm not trying to guilt you into what we just talked about, those ministries or anything like that, but what is the Lord telling you to do about this? How is the Lord telling you to be a part of a community of life and champion this? It's not, I'm going to quote Bishop Kinney, it's not in my notes, but it's in my spirit. there's this conversation that seems to keep popping up around following Jesus lately. And what seems to keep happening is I hear people talk about following Jesus, and the question they're asking is, how far do I need to go? Like, where's the line? I just don't want to cross over the line. Those of you with kids know exactly what I'm talking about, right? Don't touch it. Okay, so I can be this close to it, and I'm still not crossing the line? You know exactly what I'm talking about. And that's what seems to be the view in following Jesus. Like, how far do I need to go that I can say I'm still doing what I'm supposed to do? It's the wrong question to ask. The question we're supposed to be asking is, what do I need to do to honor God, regardless of where the line is? What do I need to do so that I'm obeying how the Lord's calling me? I'm following the Spirit's leading, that I am one who lives out my faith. I'm going to ask you the same question when it comes to this. We know that God created man fearfully and wonderfully, and all of humankind is worthy of life. How are you as an individual going to live that out? I can't answer that question for you. You heard a couple of examples. I'm going to ask you to pray about what the Lord is ask, how the Lord is asking you to be a part of that. I'm going to invite the worship team up. I'm going to close our, I know this has gone a little long. Let me close us in a time of prayer. As they're coming up, I'll pray. Father, I thank you again. Even if I just look at the way you've explained your relationship to me, as we read in Psalm 139, that you knit me together in my mother's womb, that you saw all the days of my life before I was formed, that I was fearfully and wonderfully made. And while I can stand here and say I have felt that, I have been in relationship with you long enough to know that that is true, it is real. But it's not just for me. You said that about all mankind, even the ones that we think aren't worthy of it. Father, I pray that we would not ignore this, that you call us to be people who champion life, to value what you value. Father, help us to be a church that takes this serious. I thank you for whatever work you're going to do in and before we ever see it. I pray this in your name. Amen. We'll sing one more song together.